And Craig, do you know, is would Cammy Granato be the highest ranked woman in a hockey organization right now? NHL, that is?
I mean, Cammy is a scout, right? So there's other female scouts in the National Hockey League. So, I mean, she would have company in that regard with other women that are in that scouting position. I'm trying to, like, you know, I can't really think of anyone, like, in management positions that are right now prominent in the NHL. I mean, you have Kim Davis, who is working in the NHL head office. I mean, she's a very prominent executive, not a GM. And, you know, there's other women executives in different areas, not necessarily specific to hockey, but involved in the hockey operations. There's no assistant GMs that are women, no directors of scouting that are women. So, you know, Cammy would, and a few others, Blake Bolden, who was in LA, is another one that's doing that. And, you know, I know Noel Needham is an assistant general manager with the Chicago Steel in the USHL. Ryan Hardy just hired her. So, and, you know, there's some women in management positions outside the NHL. Certainly, I believe the former Swiss players, the manager of the Zurich entry in the Swiss League. Mm-hmm. So, you know, outside the NHL, we have some women that are in management, you know, significant management positions.
Craig Button from TSN joined us, you know, probably a few years, but that definitely opens up another opportunity. There's some in director development or player development, stuff like that, Haley Wickenheiser, et cetera. Now, Craig, there's lots of talk about, you know, the options. And, hey, when you got COVID, you got to look at all different options. I think a Canadian division seems all – if there's going to be a return to play in the NHL, a Canadian division's all but guaranteed. It just comes down to schedule. Let's say, Craig, you're sitting at the GM's meeting. They had just the Board of Governors, and they're talking about scheduling. Would you prefer – that they did, you know, you, like Bettman had mentioned, all the, you know, seven teams in one division would go, let's say, to Edmonton, and then they'd stay there for 12 or 14 days, and they'd play six or seven games, and then go home for a week. Or do you like having to fly in to different places and you play three games at a time? Is there a benefit either one that you like better?
Well, I guess what I would say is I would be in favor of one that minimizes the risk of spreading COVID or contacting COVID. That's what I would do. And at the same time, you know, depending on where you're at, you know, are you going to be able to have fans to a certain extent in your building as well? So, you know, that's where I would, I think that's where I would be looking at first and foremost with respect to it. You know, like, you look at seven teams in Canada, other divisions of eight. Like I'm having a tough time getting my head around anything more than a 48-game schedule.
I'm with
and,
you.
And, you know, I think it works. The numbers work, and a lot of it now, 56 might work, and, you know, but not much more. But I think, you know, we talked about the Summer Olympics and not trying to jam up against that, trying to get back on a more traditional schedule. Well, at some point in time, you're going to have to shorten your schedule. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why not do it now? I think now is the best time. From what I understand, the players are prepared to begin play in the beginning of 2021. So, you know, depending on, you know, where the teams are, like you look at Winnipeg right now. So Winnipeg, because of a full shutdown in Manitoba, you know, it's hard for them, not hard, it's possible for them to have teams come in there, right? We see the effects in Quebec and in Ontario. You know, recently what just happened yesterday, what just happened here in Alberta with Edmonton. So that's where I think you have to have some flexibility with respect to minimizing the risk and what it means. And it's the same thing in the United States. I mean, there's different jurisdictions and different locales with different mandates and different regulations regarding COVID. So, you know, I think it's really difficult to say it's just this or that. And you know, you might start with one idea, and you might have to shift to another idea. And I think you have to be open to those types of contingencies.
Well, you know, Craig, what really concerns me, and I'd love to get your thought on this, is that you see in the NFL that, you know, pops up, oh, player tests positive, training center shuts down, they're doing everything virtually. But that system seems to work when you have one game a week. What about if you do have a three-game matchup, Oilers in Winnipeg to play them three times or something like that? Like, how would you manage that? Like, how big would your roster have to be to be able to spread out and absorb any kind of, you know, losses you may have because of COVID, you know, outlets being taken out with some of your players?
Well, you know, that's another big question, Jason, with respect to how large your roster has to be. You know, there's no minor leagues playing, so there's no way to call up players that are in a state of readiness to come in case of an injury. And well, let's put COVID under that parameter of injury. So you don't have that. So we saw that teams were able, they maxed it out at 31 in the bubble. And so what's it going to be? But keep in mind this, there's also a cost to that. Right. So, you know, right. No fans, increased cost of having players on and I mean, you're not going to pay a extra players American League salaries. You're paying them NHL salaries. So, you know, these are some of the challenges you have to work through, but ones that are incredibly important because of what you just outlined. And, you know, again, you know, you're going to need a lot more players. A 23-man roster just can't work under this scenario. It simply can't because you don't have players that are playing anywhere else. So what is that number? Is it 28? Is it 29? Is it 30? And you know, okay, so a couple players, you know, you move out, you have the ability to add those players. You know, again, I keep using the word of flexibility, but there has to be a flexibility in understanding that this scenario and the current landscape that we're confronted with requires, you know, flexibility. And because the one thing that I will say, and if you're going to be rigid, you're going to run up against the wall and you're not going to have any ability to adjust.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Yeah, it's a fascinating question about, you know, whether or not they're going to play American League games or not. You know, it's a pretty big cost there. Obviously, they don't have even a television deal for the most part. But there is the development thing. Yeah, I wonder, Craig, if there's some sort of negotiation that says, okay, you can have an expanded roster, but some of those guys are going to be they're going to be getting their American League, money rather than their NHL money.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, and maybe you have an agreement, and players say they do that, and but you know, that's that, you know, you're in the NHL, and you know it's a hard thing to ask, you know, for players. What, wait a second, I'm playing in the NHL. Why should I take my American League salary? And you know, the other part of this too is that when we talk about the American Hockey League and the cost, so you know you're operating your franchise, so. You know, you're the Edmonton Oilers. You're operating your franchise. You're operating your team in Bakersfield. Well, there's a significant cost to that. So now you're going without revenues, and now you're adding costs in other areas. And so now we're talking about the economics of the game, and we're talking about the owners with respect to, how much they could potentially lose. And then what the players in the NHL have worked to try to understand, okay, we might be in this climate for a period of time. You know, they made the adjustment in the CBA. But when you're talking about real dollars and somebody comes in and says, yeah, here's how we could do it, but it's going to cost you X amount more. There's not a lot of owners that are going to be on board for that. And so that's, again, like, you know, when we're looking at solutions and we're looking at what can work in a return to play, there's a lot on the table here. It's not as simple as, you know, we read about, oh, they're going to have a committee and they're going to talk. Well, great. You know what? But what you're talking about is significant. And understanding what you're talking about is even more significant to find appropriate solutions.
And we haven't even touched on, as we're joined by Craig Button, we haven't even touched on the idea of will they get a prorated or a full salary for the year? I mean, that to me is, I think that's got to be the first thing you figure out.
Do you guys honestly think that's a negotiation? Like, I think it's pretty point blank. It's going to be prorated. No?
No. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that because I wasn't in the league, but to Jason Strudwick's commentary, right, you have to work that out because if the understanding is, based on the players in the return to play in the new CDA, that they were going to take a 20% hit on escrow and then another 10% deferral, that they were only going to get 72% of their salaries, right? Well, you know what? If that's what the player's expectation is, well, then, okay, so now where do you go from there? Is it going to be prorated? They said, we've already done this. We're deferring our salaries, a portion of our salaries. I would think that if the case is that the, you know, this is what the agreement is, well, then they're going to have to negotiate on further deferrals. They're going to have to negotiate on saying, okay, how much more would you be willing to defer into the future? And then deferrals, salary deferral has been something that was prevalent for years, you know, amongst franchises. So, you know, like to Jason Strudwick's question and to his point, that's significant. Because now we're talking about real dollars. And, you know, the players are sitting there going, well, we agreed to come back under these conditions. You know, our last paycheck, you know, we put it into escrow. We've agreed to maximize an escrow at 20%. We're agreeing to 10% deferral this year. Well, now you're asking us to prorate? Well, I mean, that becomes a little bit more one-sided. And so, again, that's where the conversations and the discussions have to be. The solutions aren't easy. It's not just simply, and I said, you know, we read, oh, they're going to have this committee, they're reading it. Man, whoopee-doo. It is a really hard and needs to be thorough understanding of what the issues and challenges are, and then trying to come up with really good, solid solutions.
Craig, maybe January we'll have hockey. We'll see. Quickly, give me your thoughts on the World Junior. Now that you see what the rosters for the most part are going to be, is Canada and Russia your top two teams? Is there anybody else you like, or maybe you like better than even Canada and Russia?
I think it's going to be a highly competitive tournament. I think Sweden. If you go back in time and you just start to evaluate, you know, the age group. So this is an 0-1 age group that is, when you talk about the bulk of the players made. So the USA, the 0-1 team that played at the National Team Development Program, best team I ever saw. Now, maybe Jack Hughes will be available, but that's still a good team. They got Spencer Knight. They got Trevor Zegras. They got Caulfield. They got Boldy. And that's a Turcotte available. I mean, that's a really, really good team. The Swedes won the U18. They beat Russia with Askarov, who's a hell of a goaltender. And then if you want to underestimate the Finns, do it at your own peril. Canada's going to have a terrific team, but I think it's a five team battle for the gold medal. And the one thing for Canada is that they're, you know, with the lack of competition that the players have had overall, you know, they got one hard game in the tournament leading up to the to get to the quarterfinal, and that is against Finland. That other group with Sweden and Russia and the Czechs and the USA all playing, they're going to be battle tested. So, you know, puts another challenge in there for Canada. I have no question that they're going to be competing for a gold medal, but this isn't a given for this team because the quality of competition across five teams might be as high as any tournament has ever seen.
Great stuff, Craig. We look forward to it. Have yourself an awesome weekend.
I will. I think I'll be going cross-country skiing. I just bought cross-country skis, Jason Strudwick. Send you some video of that instead of my pickleball exploits.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to hear how good you are at that, too. Who's your buddy, Donnie? He's going to send us video about you're one of the elite members of the ski team.
Well, he doesn't. He won't be cross country skiing, but maybe I'll bring my racquetball paddle and just kind of do two things at the same time.
I love it. Well, it's a great way to spend a day. Once my foot heals up, I'm all about it.
Yeah, there you go.